Just hold off till he gets there with the mic.
We've discussed pretty thoroughly the history and the origin of Annette Island and the history of the lands claim policies that were brought to the council. One of the impacts that I'd like to just discuss that was touched on briefly here was a bill that Metlakatla as a community authored, and it was Bill 9638. Okay, this came about because of the crude manner that the government, I believe through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the manner in which they approached the enrollment situation. And a statement was made at that time that had I enrolled my puppy dog, he'd be a strong shareholder today. That's how much background work they had done. There was brothers in the community here where one was determined an eligible member and the other one was not. The bill had exact rules that were supposed to have been followed. And as spelled out earlier, that you could not belong to the community of Metlakatla and also participate in the lands claim at the same time. So the government went through this procedure of identifying those people they wanted, that they believed were eligible to be on the roll, but they left us with no information, nothing to work with. We tried to tap their resource by going through their role and going through our role and coming up with a conclusion, but this was never made available to us. We have a responsibility as a council to be exact in our qualifications and eligibility of membership in the community. Otherwise, we could suffer the loss of this community by not properly maintaining it. If we start accepting people who are not eligible to be members of the community into the community, then you've got no, you don't have a sanctioned right to it, you know, as far as the government is concerned. So we're all the time trying to establish our role and the rights of the members within that role. And we came across a situation where several members of the community were asking the council, well, there are people living in the community who have elected of their own free right to join the lands claim, which is fine. But what is the difference between their rights and our rights of the people who elected to stay with the community? We see no difference. So the council said, well, that's right, we better start making the difference known. For example, in order to have land here, you have to be a member of the community. So we tried to move in that direction, and we got the advice of our attorneys that we couldn't do that. Even though we knew that someone was on the lands claim and was here occupying a parcel of land, there was nothing we could do because of the bungled up mess that the government made of the role. Our attorneys advised us that we could be sued as a council if we tried to put somebody in his proper status as far as the lands claim in the community is concerned. And the only way that we could straighten this thing out is if the council authored a bill that had to be passed by the Senate and the House and signed by the President, and that became the Metlakatla bill. That said, okay, taking into effect that there was so much confusion, we're notifying everybody now that 2 years as of this date, and this is the fact. If you don't join the community, then you're going to be not considered a member, and all of those things that go along with not being a member will happen. So that two-year period went by, and that was even messed up. But that's one of the biggest impacts we have right now is that the government has forsaken this trust responsibility to our tribe in helping us in every way possible by using all the sophisticated computer equipment they have in helping us identify who is eligible to become a member of the community. A list of names will be presented to the council, and we don't know if they're participants in a corporation. We have only that person's say-so. And so that's one of our biggest problems, along with the fact that it's been mentioned before that as we get down to the wire of 1991, every change becomes a major change to the community. Ever since the Lands Claim Bill in 1971, we have been fighting for our rights again, because a change would happen and it would become an immediate negative impact situation to the community. But those were the two big impacts, and the one I wanted to bring up was an enrollment problem. I believe that the government should have looked at the whiplash part of it. Metlakatla, and I don't know if there's any other communities similar to us, but we do have an enrollment problem that we're trying to straighten out and could have used some help from the government. But I think if we started adding up the advantages, I think we'd see a lot of them. We've learned to continue working together. We've learned to, in view of the fact that there's been several things that have happened to completely bring the community to its knees, we've always managed to draw together and pull it back out again. It's been some tough times, but the community has, I think, become stronger through this ordeal. And if we can get through it completely, I think it'll be better off for us all together.
If I may, I just wanted to touch on one item that Mr. Patterson was referring to as the membership. The way I understand the act, it's very specific and very clear. You know, as a councilman at that time, I understood the act to say that no member of the Metlakatla Indian community would be eligible to participate in the act. So therefore, what it told me was that if I chose to participate in the Land Claim Settlement Act, I have said that I am not a member of the Metlakatla Indian community. So I disagreed with our attorney at that time, as how he advised the community, because I think the act, as it is stated, is very clear. That says no member of the Metlakatla Indian community will be eligible to participate. Now, if I chose to participate, that means that I have told the federal government that I am not a member of the Metlakatla Indian community, and in the community's bylaws, it says that only bona fide members of the Metlakatla Indian community will be eligible to own parcels of land on Annette. So I think that's quite clear, that I can't come back and say, hey, I want a parcel of land on Annette Island, even though I'm a participant of the Land Claim Settlement Act, after I had already said that I wasn't a member of the community. I think it's quite easy. But where the problem arises is that, as been pointed out before, that a blood is thicker than water. Mr. Patterson pointed out that brothers have been declared, one brother was declared eligible and another brother is declared ineligible. So it creates a real turmoil in that sense. And it brings division amongst that family and people in the community.
Deeply involved in the settlement process, I'd like to hear from Mr. Smith, Mr. Hayward, Mr. Ryan. These men were the men in power at that time, because the land claims law was back several years ago, and then I also want to say something after that. Mr.
Smith?
My name is, I have a very famous name. John Smith. I don't know what happened to Pocahontas at this time. But anyway, I was born here in Metlakatla in 1906. And July 24th, I'll be 78 years old. I'm proud of my age because not very many of us live this long. Basketball members and friends and so forth. And this is one of the devil that's still alive. So. You know, the when this came up with the Hattis and the Clinkets, you heard Mr. Patterson talk about the dissension we had here in the council at that time when it came up if we wanted to join the Indian land claim. And at that time, some of our senators were very active, and they came and talked to us and told us the advantages we would have if we joined the Indian land claim. And the senator that was here and stayed a couple of days with us was Senator Gravel. And Senator Gravel came to my house that night with his little secretary, and we talked about this for quite a long time. And he said, "You know, John, if you turn this down, this offer that the government's making," he said, "if you fellows turn this down, that would be the biggest mistake you're ever going to make." And so I told him, "Well," I said, I haven't been delving too much in this Indian land claim, but what I hear they're going to do is they're going to give the Haidas and the Tlinkets all this land, and we are just standing by and so forth. We don't know just exactly what we're going to get because we already have Annette Island plus 3,000 feet that President Wilson gave us in 1916. That was a proclamation that he made, I guess you know well. And so after he talked and gave me all the data of how much the people were going to make, how much each one of us was going to get throughout this development of oil in Prudhoe Bay, which we're going to share in. And so I told him, "Well, that sounds real good," but I said, I can't answer you and say, as far as an individual is concerned, that we're going to go for it. Because we've seen a lot of the work that the bureaucrats have done here in Alaska, and especially the Bureau of Indian Affairs when they came here around in 1914. And I said, "We're going to have to discuss this in a council chamber, and it's going to take us some time." So we did. And we got...
That was Senator Gravel.
So after he left, this came up, and different people came here to try and influence us to go ahead and join the Indian land claim. Now, I guess you know in your travels, in your study about Indians, that an Indian values his burial ground. He values his burial ground, and especially I think the Navajos much more so. But we don't only value this burial ground that we have here. We value the island. We value what we have here, and we know what we've been getting out of this island ever since Father Duncan and his group came over here. And so when he saw what was going on here, why he started this cannery here. And so we knew, after I became to be a good-sized boy, I knew that my mother worked at the cannery here, and my father fished, but not around the island. But that was the main thing. They had fished across the bay. They fished on the other side of the island. And I thought to myself that this is one of the greatest gifts that was given to us, this island here, and the foresight of Father Duncan and his followers that came here with him in 1887, I believe. And so I thought that if we gave this island away, like what they say, we'll give you all this money from the oil from Prudhoe Bay. Well, how long is it going to last, I asked myself. How long is this money going to last with the people here? And everybody's going to come and join us, and they'll say, and they said, if you want another island, you can have Duke Island. Now, this is what Gravel told me. Duke Island, if Duke Island isn't enough of your requirement of what the way the government has it set up, then he says, you can have maybe part of Gravina Island. Well, it sounds pretty good, and then at the same time, of all the years, I thought to myself, as I participated in the council, I was mayor for 12 years here. I've held the longest term than anybody else, and I was councilman together as mayor for 43 years altogether. And when I was 70 years old, I decided maybe I better quit. So I resigned, and they told me that if you resigned, I've just kind of thrown this in just to tell you how it happens. They said, the fellows tell me now, John, if you resign, if you quit, you're going to die. Well, I went to California and I had retired. I didn't want to be a councilman anymore because 43 or 44 years was long enough. And by gosh, a month after I retired, I had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And I almost died. But thanks to Loma Linda Hospital, I mean, they operated on me, and so I was okay. But in the meantime, we came back here. We came back here. And then we discussed this with the council about this Indian land claim. And we had some that wanted to join. It wasn't a clear picture like everybody said aye at the time. It was quite a battle. There were some of us councilmen that wanted to join the land claim. And these fellows can verify this, what I'm saying. But we fought so hard, and so finally they agreed that we wanted to. We didn't want to take a chance with the island. So the council appointed Mr. Guthrie and I and Carl Cook and myself to go to Washington for that hearing in the House of Representatives. Remember that?
Yeah.
And they had the chairman of that committee that was to decide that day of what they were going to do with the Tlinkets and the Haidas and the land settlement in Alaska. You remember his name?
I forgot.
He was a bulldog.
Yeah. That's what he called him, Little Bulldog.
Little Bulldog. I'm sorry, my mind fails me every once in a while now because of my age. Mm-hmm. But he was there, and he was a real bulldog. And he kept saying, now, to the chairman or to the chairman of the Indian Council or something, I've forgotten his name too. He's still living in Juneau. Now he said, I want to ask you, if this is all that is going to request money from the United States government, and he was the mayor at the time, but we went along as
Mr. Guthrie was the mayor
at the time, and Carl and I, we were the bulldogs. We kept telling him. Now, I said to him, Solomon, I was pretty used to the public at that time, you know. After being mayor for 12 years, I said, if you faint on the stand, you just point at me and I'll take your place. But it happened that when this little man said, now, are there any other Indians here that want to protest or that want to give us something, that they want land or something? And so we nudged him, and he went up on the stand, and he said, he told him who he was. He said, I'm Mr. Guthrie, the mayor of Metlakatla on Net Island. And he said, I have two of my men with me. And he said, we don't want any land. We don't want any settlement. This is what the council gave it to say. So after that was all over, then he asked, I wish you folks would remember his name. He was in charge of the Tlingit and Haida for years and years. Anyway.
Mr. Borbridge.
And Mr. Borbridge says, no, that's all. This is it. So we came away from there, and we know that we didn't want this, we didn't want any other land. We didn't want to participate. Because if we did, like you heard some of the men say, they said, if you participate, and each one of you gets so many $1,000 from the oil land, you lose the island, everybody can come and join you. They can join you, and that is it. And we, from our past experience, we know that all these years we've lived pretty well off this island. Our men don't have to beg anybody to fish any place. They took our fishing rights away from us, which they had no business to do.
You mean beyond the 3,000?
Beyond the 3,000 feet. I can't fish out there unless I had fished continuously from maybe 1900 or so forth, 1959. And if I had fished continuously from there, I could have fished. I could fish outside of here. But these new fellows that just came, these new boys that are born, like Frank's sons, he's got two or three boys, and they don't have any license. They can't go beyond this island here. They can fish on the island because we ask for this particular island. And so we wonder after that, why is it that we have a boundary now? Why do we have a boundary? His uncle was hunting fur seal up there in the Gulf of Alaska before I was born in 1900. His uncle was killed up there, hunting up there in that land. And my father was from Sitka, and he worked all over the mines in Alaska. My uncle worked up there in up above Wrangell in the Stikine River years ago. And these fellows were trading up in Juneau before I was born. My dad was in Sitka Sheldon Jackson School. They called it Sitka Mission at the time. And when he got to be 17 years old, they told him, Mr. Smith, you have to go. You're too old now to be. You better go and work in Juneau. So he went to Juneau. And some of the boys that were from Metlakatla that went to SJ, they told him to come to Metlakatla. There's a new Metlakatla. So he came here. But the thing is that these fellows were all over Alaska. And so when Congress made a settlement with the Tlingits and the Eskimos and so forth, why, they forgot about the Tsimshians, because he was hunting up in Alaska. He was doing trading with the Tlingits and everybody all up and down here. Charlie Brendable, who lives in this house over here, told me. He said, I'm from Foggy Bay. He said, I'm from Foggy Bay. They call me a Tlingit, he said. But I don't feel that I'm a Tlingit, he said, because I was mixed up with all your grandfathers, he said, and these people over in Canada. We go trade back and forth with Ulican Grease and everything that is derived from Nass River. So all of a sudden, here we are. We have a boundary. Why so? So I want to ask you, why do we have a boundary now?
Well, I Mr. Smith, under the Land Claims Settlement Act, all the Aboriginal rights of the native people of Alaska were extinguished
their right to land and their right to hunt and to fish, and that's why, once you get beyond the 3,000-foot boundary, you have no right to fish except by permit. And that's what ANCSA did. I think Judge Booth was quite right to say earlier that you lost something. You kept the island and your 3,000 feet exclusive fishery, but you lost, as all Alaskan natives did, their aboriginal rights to hunt and fish throughout the state, so that once you get beyond the boundary, you're just like other Alaska natives. You have no aboriginal rights of hunting and fishing. That's what Congress said in the Act in 1971. That's the best I can do to answer that question. I appreciate your giving me the history of the, you know, I'm trying to remember the chairman of that House committee, and I read his name every day, and
that is from the House of Representatives.
Yes. Senator Jackson chaired the Senate committee, and the House committee chairman was, oh, it'll come to me.
It's a little bulldog. He's the one that said, no, is that all the Indians, he said, in Alaska that are going to request money? Well, that's why we told him, yeah, we figured that we've got this, if we have this island, we're going to go on for a long time while those guys have sold it or lost their land or have spent all the money they have gotten from the oil sales. I understand some of them have gotten it. But not too long after that land sale, after they had that oil sales and so forth, the Clinkets and the Haidas, they were given so much money apiece. I didn't pay any attention. I didn't care about it. Neither do these fishermen around the island here. But Charlie Nelson came to me. I guess maybe you've met him by now. Charlie Nelson is a Haida from Craig, I think, and he lives in Ketchikan. About 2 years after the land claims, or 3 years after it was over, I met him in Ketchikan. And he said, John, he said, you know, I think you fellows are pretty smart. They call you dumb Simsians every once in a while. There's dumb Simsians. They didn't even want any money from Congress. But I don't think you're dumb. He says, look at now. What are our people getting? They have nothing now. I don't know how true that is, but that's just exactly what Charlie Nelson, one of the executives in the Clinkets or the Haidas and so forth. Now the Clinkets are saying now, I just read it in the paper or some magazine the other day. The Clinkets are saying now, what in the hell does the United States, what are they doing? They sold our land to the Russians and they never owned this land in the first place. That's what they said. Now, they don't have any oil money coming in, but we still have fish coming in here. And they're going to come in for a hell of a long time.
Judge Berger, if I may, you touched on...
Just, let's take the mic over there.
You touched on a couple of areas that is very tender for our people. You touched on some of the areas that, some of the things that, the privileges that the Indian people once enjoyed will be extinguished because of the Land Claim Settlement Act. That is one area, that is the areas that we are concerned about. We are concerned about certain rights that we've had prior to the Land Claim Settlement Act that will be extinguished in 1991 through the fine print of the Land Claim Settlement Act. And we are afraid, and I think we have a right to be afraid, to fall in the stream flow of that area where they're going to be extinguishing certain services to Indian people. And this is where I indicated that the community is continually spending money on legal advice in trying to keep us abreast of what is happening and what's going to happen, so that we don't find all of a sudden that we have no more Indian health services. We have certain rights and services that we've always had be wiped out. It's difficult to get anything back once it's been taken away from you. So I really want to emphasize on the fact that we are continually struggling because of the land claim settlement, the inequities of the Land Claim Settlement Act, even though we weren't involved. Why should we give up these rights if the original participants are willing to give it up for the settlement? We feel that we should not be included in there because we didn't receive any kind of a settlement.
Could I ask a question of you, Mr. Nelson, since you recently served as mayor? I just want to ask a question of you about the government here. You have your own mayor and council elected by all this, Native people living on the island who are...
Not by all of the Native people living on the island, Your Honor. They're elected by bona fide members of the community. Only bona fide members of the community have the right to own land and to vote in the municipal election. The community has a mayor, an acting mayor, that is included in the 12 councilmen that is elected. And serves the community. We elect 6 councilmen every year. The councilmen's terms are 2 years, and the reason for that, we always have at least 6 people serving on the council with experience.
Does the council levy taxes on the people who live on the island?
No. No, that's been talked about, and there is a bill that for some reason has not been taken off the shelf yet, that was proposed to levy an income tax so that it would help the local government run the community's business.
Do you have the power to levy a tax on property as well?
I believe so, but I think that would be the last thing in the world that the council would do, is to levy property taxes against the people. I think that the council may be willing to look at an income tax.
Can you tell me how property is held? The individual members of the community who have houses, how is the property beneath their homes held?
All of the property, as I understand, is owned by the, is held in trust by the United States. And basically what we receive is a use permit. Each member that is awarded a piece of residential property is given a permit.
By the council?
By the council, yes.
A permit to occupy that site.
That's right.
And can he sell it, or what happens if...
Yes, he can sell it. Once he has issued a permit, he can sell. Actually, what he would be doing there is he would be selling his improvements on that lot.
With the permission of the council?
With the approval of the council.
Oh, he can only sell with the permission of the council?
Yes, and he can only sell it to a bona fide member.
Well, now the non-members, native and non-native, living on the island, they are they given permits to occupy their property?
No.
Well, can you
tell? They're married to one of our members. They can live here. I send you right there.
Did you pick that up from Mr. Hayward? The only non-members of the community on the island then are persons married to members. Is that it?
And those who receive resident permits that are approved by the council, and those are people who are key people, cannery employees, police officers, program directors who come in, the field positions that the community is not able to fill, which we I don't think we have very many of those left anymore. Most
those
of the
might be Native or non-Native people.
That's right.
And they are given a permit.
A resident permit, yes.
A resident permit. And a working permit.
Yes.
Can they sell their permit?
Why not?
No.
Well, the permit is only good for the duration of the job. The permit is basically canceled if the person chose to leave or quit the job. It doesn't allow them to quit that job and take another job. That permit is only good for that job that that person came into the community for. The reason we do that, Your Honor, is that jobs are so scarce, and the employment rate about 8 months out of the year runs about 70% here in Metlakatla, and we have to protect our bona fide members.
Unemployment,
excuse me.
People that are eligible to vote for the members of the council and the mayor are only members of the community are entitled to do that.
That's right.
But everybody on the island, members and non-members, native and non-native, are of course free to vote in state and federal elections.
Right. Right.
Well, glad we cleared that up. Did you want to, were there some others you
got? Yeah, I'd like to hear from Mr. Hayward and Mr. Leask and Mr. Ryan.
All right. If you might take the microphone back to
these are fellows that were deeply involved.
Oh, just before Mr. Leask begins, I should say that this gentleman arrived late.
I don't have too much to say. I listened to Smith, Mr. Guthrie, and it's all been pretty well covered, I think. I don't have very much to add to that.
Well,
thanks, Mr. That's substantial.
Is this another
Mr. Chairman? All the members present here today. A few years back, I used to be active in public affairs of Metlakatla. I loved this island. I loved the name, and I love all the members of Metlakatla. A few years back, only about 50 years ago, I came to Metlakatla to visit my auntie, and I went through the customs in Ketchikan, and the immigration officer asked me, how long are you going to stay in Metlakatla? I told him about a week. Thank you, he said. And my week is not up yet. I went through a lot of experiences when I first come to Metlakatla. And I said, I love Metlakatla. That's a truth, a faithful truth. Now, the citizenship came up. I was excluded from this citizenship when it was dished out to the pioneers of Metlakatla because I came here after 1900. Prior to 1900, they were eligible to automatically given citizenship. So anyway, my bill went to Congress. Individual bill went to the Senate, went to the House of Representatives, and they told him. I forgot his name now.
Diamond?
No, the President.
Oh, Roosevelt.
Roosevelt. I said, you sign my name, President. He did. And that's how I became citizen of the United States, through special act of Congress. And I'm the only one. You search another person in your state or Alaska, you'll never find that has the same privilege I have. But I'm enjoying myself. But my my saying is this. I go to the Constitution, if it has any bearings on the people of Medlicata. There's an issue in the Constitution that states that we can adopt, we can go and get a person, and I'll say, well, I'll adopt you. I'll make you a citizen of Medlicata. That's the one that I did not like when the lawyer was here a few years back. And he came down the house with one of the members of the council. And he said, why are you opposed to this constitution? And I told him differently. I said, it isn't written out rightly. The council can approve, can reject, or they can disqualify a certain clause in the Constitution, which I did not agree the way it was posted. Anyway, that's the work that I done for the town. But I enjoyed myself, like Mr. Smith and other members here. We don't go into the council just for a year and then get out. My time in the council was about 15 or 16 years. And I told them, people, give me a chance to be a mayor for 1 year, I'll quit. You don't hear from me anymore. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm a free man. But anybody that lives in Medlicata, that's the reason I'm saying I love Medlicata. I've seen other people come here and they get stuck here. They love Medlicata. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Frank Hayward. Been a council for 30 years, and I've decided to step down the past year. The involvement I have in land claims is quite lengthy. Now, the only comment I wish to make today about land claims, you know, the United States government made a settlement with Alaska Native people. He didn't say Alaska Native corporations. I think what is happening now, instead of the United States government dealing directly with the natives that they have dealt with, are dealing with corporations, which is putting this totally out of focus. The people that were involved in giving up their rights were the natives, the Indian. And they no longer have that right. It seems as though the corporations are the ones that are doing the deals with the United States government. And this is where a lot of the kickback is coming from. And this is the only bad situation I see about the land claims. It's going totally in a different direction. Now, our involvement when land claims came into being, we sat night after night with these men trying to make a decision. There were people that came to us and tried to entice us by saying that all you have to do when you sign your name to become a member of Alaska Land Claims is to put your mother's hometown as your residence. Immediately I argued with the man that told me this. And I told him that I think this isn't right. This is wrong. Your residence is a place where you live, where your home is. And the present place of living It's not going to hurt anything. All you have to do is put your name down, where your mother came from. Well, it just happened that I was born from a lady that was born up in Hoonah, that was raised in Hoonah. And I couldn't do that. So a lot of the people that were pulled into the land claims was through this very thing that was brought to them. Now, many of them want to get off the land claims. But the land claims law says, no, you can't get off. Once your name is on the record, it's there for good, even long after you're gone. So that makes it complicated for those who want to get off the land claims. Now, I think if the United States government deals directly with the Indians that they have dealt with, I think progress will be made in the right direction. This is all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Hayward.
Do the Tlingits and Haida, or the Alaska Natives, do they think now that they made a bum deal with the government, or what? Is that your purpose?
Well, I'm going around the state and holding meetings like this to find out what Alaska Natives think of the land claim settlement. Now, some of them, like the people from Kasan, Mr. Nelson mentioned them, they're a small village of about 100 people, I think, and they got some timber. So in 1979, at the height of the timber market, they just took a bunch of timber and sold it, got some money, put it in the bank, paid everybody $25,000 out of the interest, and now they pay them $10,000 a year to every person out of the interest each year. Now, those shareholders are happy. It won't surprise you to find that out. But a lot of shareholders in other corporations, shareholders in Sea Alaska, and shareholders in other parts of the state, are unhappy. We've been, I think this is the 16th village or town we've been to hold hearings, and we will be holding hearings throughout the rest of the year, so the verdict won't be in until the end of the year, until we've heard from all the villages and towns. But there's a lot of dissatisfaction there, but some people feel it's worked out well, and Kasan is the best example of that. But whether that they think as a whole they made a bum deal, well, wait until we've heard from more villages and towns before we can make up our minds about that.
Yeah, may I ask a question?
Yes.
I'm not quite clear of your sponsor.
Well, the sponsor is the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Canada, Alaska, and Greenland, and the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization of Indians from North and South America. And they were requested by Alaska Natives to appoint a commission to review the land claims. So they asked me to come from Canada to conduct the review. I suppose they felt that I would be neutral, being from outside the state and not involved in any of the disputes about land claims within the state. So that's why I'm here. And we've been going to villages in every region, and people have invited us to come, and we've held meetings like this one.
Now, do you have meetings in Canada too, like you're doing here?
No. In Canada, they're just starting to settle their land claims, and they want to read my report about Alaska, so that they can decide, well, should we settle our claims the way Alaska Natives settled theirs? And that's why they are interested. But my report is principally, primarily for Alaska Natives.
Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to have a word to say? Anyone?
If I may, I'd like to touch just on one area for the benefit of our Indian people in Ketchikan. I think our Indian people in Ketchikan have fought basically a losing battle for a number of years. I think that they were mistreated in the settlement. I feel for them very much because they received no land base at all. You know, they're not even considered a tribe. And I think that point should be brought out, that no group of Indians should be left out as they were left out. And I think that somewhere along the line that it's a possibility that they may get some sort of settlement and possibly receive a land base and equal benefits as other recipients of the Act, even though they are involved, but they are involved partially. They basically received nothing because all of the money that came in the settlement is in the land, the timber on the land. And so I thought that it would be, in order to be fair to them, I think that it ought to be made known by other tribes and other Indian communities, the fact that I feel that they've been mistreated and that they've been more or less left out in the cold.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Nelson? Has the community of Metlakatla considered at any time becoming a state-chartered municipal government under the state of Alaska, that is a first or second-class city under the state of Alaska? Has that question come up?
Yes, the question has come up a number of times in years back, and I believe that the council chose not to get involved with that because of the fear of taxation. Anytime you talk about corporations or a community incorporating, and then it opens many doors. And some of those doors that may be open unnecessary could create some real hardships for our people.
I believe also that there would be a possibility of losing the trust status. And I want to say a little bit about trust status. The federal government is expected to do certain things for the community, and they were mentioned by Mr. Patterson. He named all the ABCs involved. And this was meted out to us through the Juneau office. Then after I say this, because it has something to do with land claims, after a period of years, the Tlingit Haida people contracted services and were dispensing the monies from Washington through the Juneau office. And when it came to the budgeting period, we were always found wanting. I know I made three trips up there to fight for Metlakatla's funding, and we by law should have gotten $180,000. This is back several years. $181,000 a year for our road system. This was what the federal government was to turn over to Metlakatla. Well, this came through the Juneau office,
and we got just a portion of that. And then we asked why, the council asked why aren't we getting it? Well, there are a lot of communities that need it worse than you do. And yet this was monies, we're the only reservation in Alaska, so we were the only people that Washington had to account for in their budgeting. So the upshot was that we lost favor with Juneau, and now we're working through the Portland area office. I just want you to know why, if it comes up later in your studies, why we're down in the Portland area office. Because down there, we're just another people, and we get a fair treatment from them. And things have improved a lot since we moved to Washington. Mr., I want you to, if you haven't already met Mr. Stone, Mr. Stone is the president of the Tsimshian Tribal Association in Ketchikan, originally a local boy. Mr. Stone may have something that he might want to say with respect to the thinking of the Ketchikan Tribal, Tsimshian Tribal Association, of which he is president. Mr. Stone?
Thank you. I think most of you know who I am. For those of you that don't, I'm Ted and Marietta Benson's grandson, Theo and Chet's only son. I lived in Metlakatla as a child, and we moved down to California. And came back when I was 12 years old, when my grandfather Ted died and began commercial fishing. And I fished out of Metlakatla for 11 years and lived up here a couple winters while I was going to college and that. And I've always regarded it as my home. I was one of the individuals that was faced with the decision of being able to be a resident of Metlakatla or a land claims shareholder. First, I want to back up a step, though, and mention that I always thought that Metlakatla should have been able to maintain their status like they have it now, plus receive at least some kind of monetary benefit because the purpose of the act was to compensate people for their Aboriginal rights. Now we had fishing camps outside of this area and little settlements, summer fish camps and things like that that Tsimshians had occupied, which is why off the island, Tsimshians were able to substantiate their presence in Alaska to be included in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Tlingit and Haida received a settlement. I believe it was $7.5 million, and it was my understanding that they were supposed to be excluded from any kind of settlement after that. That was their settlement, but they had that money to use to lobby, to get their voice heard, and were able to be included in the Land Claims Settlement Act in a major way. In fact, it able to take control of the Southeast situation. I wouldn't see that much different than Metlakatlans had already received their settlement, so to say, through presidential proclamation, should have been able to reap some of the benefits without jeopardizing their tribal trust status with the U.S. government. And if not so, we at the Tsimshian Tribal and Ketchikan strongly feel that at least Ketchikan off the island natives, Tsimshians, that had given up their rights here or the, you know, have been denied to do both, received nothing. We've received very little in money from the corporations. We have no land base, as Mr. Nelson said. And also, we're small in number. We have no say-so in what the corporations do. We don't even have a representative on the board of directors, a Tsimshian. So we have no representation. And we feel that we've been slighted because of that, because we see things happen, and we feel we have input that could help change it, help make things better. We think differently than other people, and yet they'll listen, but they ignore what we say and never implement things. So we gave extensive testimony while Judge Berger was in Ketchikan, and we have that, and I will make it available to Ira and to whomever else wants a copy of that so you can read what we had to say as a group. We got together and brainstormed all the ideas, the good and bad things about it. We worked on it for a couple weeks, and then we made recommendations too, what we thought that this commission should use our, you know, make some suggestions that we had specifically for Sea Alaska, as well as suggestions we had for any other country that might be considering a similar land claim settlement. Anyway, I fished for a long time, and I didn't know, but for a long time I was thinking I wanted to continue to be a fisherman. And I was just fishing summers, just as a crewman with different people, and Cliff Hudson and Jackie Booth and Bert May and them. And anyway, at one point in college, I decided I want to go to law school, so I decided that I didn't want to make fishing a career. And that was about the point when I was decided with making the decision. They got the extension that said if your land claims, then you could have a chance to get off and become a member of Annette Island. Well, my mother's the one who signed me up for land claims because I was only, 12 years old, I think, when it all started, or 13 when it all started. And that decision was back and forth. I was for sure going to stay a member of Annette Island and then talk to different people, and then I'm for sure going to go with the corporation. And what it all boiled down to is on whether or not I thought I was going to live here. When I returned from college, I got married, and then my wife got pregnant. We're going to have a baby, and I came back here to try to get a job, and there was nothing available right there, and I just flew over to Ketchikan, and just things worked out. I got a job the very next day, and so I ended up staying there, and it's at that point that I decided that since I wasn't going to be living here, and since I wasn't fishing especially, that really I would derive no benefits from being a member of Annette Island. But yet it was one of the most difficult decisions of my life, because what I'm hearing is that, look, once you make that choice, there's no turning back. You know, I love this community too, and I don't have as much at stake of it as most of you do, but I sure feel it's home. And I love to come here, I love to fish and visit and hunt and other things. And those things have been, you know, I'm deprived of those rights now because I'm not a member. And I feel I could really contribute to the community. And so I know there's a lot of people like me, a lot of people who want to retire here, you know, who would be a good benefit to the community, people you all know, you know, Francis Haldane, people like that in Anchorage, and people like my mother and that have done different things, but someday would like to come back. And we're hearing now that we're not going to be able to afford, you know, be able to do that. And I kind of agree with what Russell said earlier, that, you know, if you're a member of a corporation, although this is different than a private corporation because this was given up, supposedly we gave up something to receive these stocks of these native corporations.